In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown.
You had better believe it. Yes, Alan Adams is here with us in studio on this Monday afternoon to talk movies, Oscars, and more. Hello, Alan.
Hello, sir.
Wonderful to see you.
And wonderful to see you as well.
How's your Monday so far?
So far, so good. Had a pretty good one.
Oh, what a nice day.
Yeah, tough to have a bad time when it's 50 degrees outside. First of March.
Stella get to get out and enjoy some of this?
A little bit this morning. We're actually going to take a nice little extended stroll once I get home after this.
Nice.
So that'll be nice.
Very nice. Yeah, Ginger was loving life today, soaking up the sunshine. Well, you got a lot to cover here. So do you want to start with your theater experience first?
Yeah, let's go with that, because I just wanted to make we don't need to talk about it a ton, but I would like to just share with folks. I went to see the opening night performance of My Name is Gluskabe, the current production at the Penobscot Theater Company. It is based on traditional tales from the Penobscot around their sort of folk hero, Gluskabe. And it's written by, well, written, it's difficult to parse exactly where the oral tradition stops and the written part begins, but suffice to say, there are, I think, 12 or 13 distinct tales. I think Carol Dana of the Penobscot Nation was sort of the driving force, along with Margot Lukens from the University of Maine, and a number of other, they call them story keepers for the Penobscot. But yeah, it's basically these wonderful folk tales about this sort of larger-than-life hero named Gluskabe, who... a bit of a man-child, and so...
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
So, like, kind of stumbles through, I was talking to my wife afterwards, and I was like, you know, it's kind of like Dunning-Kruger or the Peter Principle. Like, Gluskabe keeps failing upwards, and, you know, while his wonderful, wise, and much smarter grandmother sort of keeps things under control. But the performances are great. Some wonderful indigenous actors. They brought in cast members from the Dramatic Academy to fill out the ensemble.
Yeah, we had a couple of the actors in last week, Veto Villalobos and Kylie Turner, and they were very excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a wonderful show. Visually stunning. Like, the production values are off the charts, including some really phenomenal large puppet work that you really need to see to understand. Like, when the frog comes out, you know. But yeah, it was just like, it's the set design is beautiful, the lights, visually stunning. The performances were fun, and the stories were really fascinating. And it's interesting to sort of be in a place where you're thinking about, when we think of like cultural differences, we tend to think of like faraway places. It was really fascinating to see that sort of rich cultural heritage, you know, from down the street that you weren't necessarily aware of or fully aware of. And so it's a wonderful story. It's a romp. The kids will actually really love this show as well. And it's got a wonderful sort of educational component as well as being entertaining. So yeah, can't stress enough. My story is My Name is Gluskabe. You should really check it out. It's running at the Penobscot Theater Company for the next two weekends, I believe.
Yeah, so. Looking forward to seeing that. You also got to the movies and saw Dune 2.
I did, and oh man, yeah, I was very excited about Dune Part 2. I was also aware that there's a lot going on in Dune. I've read the book. You know, I saw the David Lynch movie from the mid-80s. I saw, of course, the first part of this with Denis Villeneuve directing. But I did take the time last week to rewatch the first part, because there are a lot of characters, there are a lot of names, there's a lot going on. It's very planetary in scope. There's a lot of political machination going on, mysticism, politics, like the whole shebang. So going back for a rewatch was the right move. But man, I tell you what, like I was almost certain to be disappointed by this movie, and yet I was not. Because it's the payoff. You know what I mean? Like, there's A lot of people, well, I say a lot of people, the among the relatively minor complaints surrounding part one was that it felt sort of incomplete because it was, in fact, a part one. Mm. Let me just say, if you're worried about it, anyone out there, it's all paid off for you in part two. We get to see some phenomenal, like, set pieces, whether we're talking about the grand... the grand sands of Arrakis, or the bleak black sun of the home planet of the Harkonnens, or what have you. Like, it's just this wonderfully, like, visual experience that, and I think some people are going to struggle with this a little bit, but it largely eschews that sci-fi tendency to overexplain. And so rather than walking you through the exposition to get from one significant plot point to the other, they kind of just do away with a lot of that stuff and just trust you that, like, as a functioning human being, that you'll be able to follow along. And you can. Like, it's really, it's not like you're going to get lost or anything. But just an absolutely stellar cast. You know, Timothée Chalamet, I know a lot of people had some doubts about him as Paul Atreides. I never really did, because I always sort of viewed Paul as more of the boy king rather than the sort of action, the strapped action star that some people wanted him to be. So it worked for me. Obviously we've got some wonderful performances from Rebecca Ferguson, Dave Bautista, Javier Bardem, Zendaya, and then we've got some newcomers. Austin Butler is great in this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
He is something. I'm not going to go into too many specifics, but he goes full Harkonnen in a way that you might not anticipate. Stellan Skarsgård is back. Speaking of Harkonnens, he's back as Baron Harkonnen. He's spooky and gross, as that character needs to be. Florence Pugh is in this movie.
Wow.
Anya Taylor-Joy shows up for a minute in a role that was a kind of a delightful surprise. Won't spoil it. And this is maybe a little bit of a spoiler, but I really want to say it out loud. As your Galactic Emperor, Christopher Walken.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And he's so good.
Wow.
He's so good. Like, they're all so good. Like, that's the thing. You know, Denis Villeneuve is such a gifted filmmaker, like, full stop, but he has a real gift, I think, for this sort of, like, sweeping sci-fi epic kind of storytelling. And so for him to be able to tackle this book, this sweeping sort of story that, you know, if you continue, like, extends, like, thousands of years. And so and we're already in talks. Dune Messiah is in the works, so another movie is coming, which is going to be a great relief to those who watched this one and got to the end, who were like, well, I would like more of that, please. And we're going to get it eventually. Tough to say when, but put it, let's just say, like, some of these parts, you don't cast the people you cast unless you anticipate doing more with them. Like, that's kind of the vibe I got. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next with Dune Messiah. But, they did $81.5 million at the box office this weekend. First, like, legitimate sort of, like, quote unquote hit of 2024. It kicks off a month where I think we're going to see some pretty big numbers coming from the box office. I just think we're starting to see some of the big releases are going to start rolling out, both for, like, these sort of action movies. Some pretty big kids movies are coming. Like, we're ramping back up after the fallout from the writer's strike and the actor's strike. I think we're finally putting that behind us, and it's going to get crowded. The calendar's going to get crowded here in the next couple of months, which is a good thing. Like, if you love movies, buckle up, because it's going to be a good couple of months.
Looking forward to it. We're going to take a little break, and then we come back. More Alan. We talk about the Oscars 1 week from last night. The Academy Awards. Alan previews it next on Downtown. This is your 2024 insurance wake-up call, brought to you by FA Peabody Insurance. Don't forget to check if your insurance is ready for the ride. Call FA Peabody today for a policy refresh. They'll make sure you're protected from whatever twists and turns might come your way. Online, on the phone, or in person, their agents are there to help you enjoy 2024 fully protected. Find them at FAPBuddy.com. Call 877-960-1457 or visit one of their 13 locations across Maine. Because things happen.
Sweats Tire is a family-owned business serving the community since 1966 with a wide variety of tires and automotive repair you can depend on. Generations of customers have counted on them to help make the best decisions for all their vehicles. Sweats stocks a variety of tires from industry-leading brands like Michelin, BF Goodrich, Uniroyal, Continental, and Firestone, and has the services to help you get the most out of your tires. Sweats Tire, serving you from two locations, 451 Hogan Road and 358 State Street in Bangor.
Feel more confident and in control of your financial life. Ameriprise Advisors can work with you to provide personalized, goal-based advice based on your short and long-term goals. Plus, you can track your investments and financial solutions with our digital tools and regular meetings. Call Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Michael Toole at 207-307-7718. That's 207-307-7718. Office is located at 23 Water Street, Suite 405, Bangor, 04401. Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC.
Penobscot Theater Company is proud to present My Story is Glooskabe, as adapted by Carol Dana and other story keepers of the Penobscot Nation. These amazing stories are brought to life by a cast of indigenous artists collaborating with the Penobscot Theater Company to tell these traditional Penobscot tales. Glooskabe, a young boy, is guided by his grandmother Woodchuck through a series of amazing adventures, from tricking a monstrous frog into releasing a river to breaking Old Man Winter's icy grip on the weather. With each journey, he discovers how to live in harmony with the land, the water, the animals, and the environment. Telling these remarkable stories through music, dance, puppetry, and spectacle. Come see My Story is Glooskabe, February 29th to March 17th at the historic Bangor Opera House. For tickets, call 207-942-3333 or visit penobscottheater.org. This project is supported, in part, by the National Endowment for the Arts. Learn more at arts.gov.
At Bangor Dental Associates, their top priority is helping you achieve and maintain a beautiful, healthy smile. They offer a full range of services, including dental implants, porcelain veneers, tooth-colored fillings, and teeth whitening using the Opalescent system. Using CEREC technology, they can create customized ceramic crowns in a single visit. They also offer orthodontic treatment using Invisalign clear aligners. Give them a call at 947-7503, Bangor Dental Associates. Hey, back on Downtown and Past the Popcorn, Alan Adams here with us. And the Oscars coming up this weekend, so we thought we'd devote a little time to talking about that, doing our annual Oscars preview.
Yeah, no, I thought it would be fun. Maybe talk about the big six, maybe the screenplays, a couple other categories like that. But yeah, where would you like to start?
Well, let's start there. Let's start with screenplay.
Well, it's interesting because this is again the screenplay category is home to a little bit of a controversy this year because. Greta Gerwig wanted to submit the Barbie soundtrack screenplay for Best Original Screenplay, which makes sense. However, because Barbie is a pre-existing intellectual property, they're like, nope, this is an adaptation.
Jeez.
It's considering how much overt category fraud goes on with these nominations. I'm not sure why they decided this was one that they needed to put their foot down on, but such as it is, it just means that, that it's not going to win. Adapted screenplay is actually pretty stacked. You've got Barbie, of course, Oppenheimer is in there, Poor Things, Zone of Interest, and a movie we were talking about off air and that I think is probably where it wins something is American Fiction.
Yeah.
I have not seen it yet. You were speaking about it and you just raved about it.
It's so good.
I've heard a lot of good things, and I've heard a lot of good things specifically about the writing and Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah.
And so it'll be cool to see again, because we've got a field that's really got a couple of big powerhouses in it. Like for movies like that, it's going to be interesting to see where they can fit in the cracks and maybe take a trophy home or two. And I think that's where American Fiction lands. As far as Best Original Screenplay, you've got Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Past Lives, Maestro, and May December, a much thinner category. I think Barbie wins this one in a walk if they're in there, but they're not. The betting favorite right now is Anatomy of a Fall. That seems reasonable to me. I think it's going to win. It's probably going to win Best International Film as well. And so that'll be enough for the Academy to feel like they did their due diligence as far as rewarding a film that, again, has been very well received and by all accounts is very, very good. It's kind of a bummer because, I've seen a lot of movies. The Holdovers is an exceptional script.
Yes, it is.
We can go on and on about it, but it's like, I mean, they basically recreated one of the absolutely exquisite dramas that you used to get in the early 70s, like from the opening title cards on.
Yes.
Like, and the occasional like flickers of like the film effect, they really made an effort to recreate, I think, the sort of movie one would guess that made Alexander Payne want to make movies in the first place.
Yeah, I felt like when it strikes up, I'm watching The Paper Chase. It's 1973 again.
You know what I mean? And it's just it was really lovely to see it only because we don't get those movies anymore.
Right.
So it was great to watch that. I think, the sharps seem to think that it's going to be Anatomy of a Fall. I'm not going to argue with them, but like, if I had my druthers, I think I'd hand it to The Holdovers.
What about Best Director?
It's gonna be Nolan, I think. I don't mean to be dismissive like that. He's certainly deserving, but it kind of feels like a foregone conclusion in a lot of ways.
He has not won before, has he?
I don't believe he has, no. And so it's one of those things where it's a confluence of circumstances where you don't often get to reward, give the Lifetime Achievement Award for the Lifetime Achievement, but it kind of feels like that's where we're heading because, again, like, I don't know that you can, I don't know that there's another film in Nolan's, filmography that's as all around excellent as Oppenheimer. And this is a guy who's made a lot of great movies. You've got Yorgos Lanthimos, Jonathan Glazer for Zone of Interest, Justine Trist for Anatomy of a Fall, which was the big surprise. You don't want to replace a woman with a woman. It's a bummer to see, not to see Greta Gerwig's name here, but what are you going to do? And then last but not least,
newcomer.
this unknown player named Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, which we could talk about that a little bit too. Man, that movie's just kind of vanished from the discourse. Yeah. Like, it's wild how sort of, how it just kind of disappeared, considering like just the sheer amount of star power and like money behind it. And ultimately, I think it's gonna win a couple of things, but nothing like what we might have expected when we first heard that it was coming.
All right. Well, let's move to the acting awards and start with supporting actor and actress.
Supporting actor. You got Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer.
So good.
Ryan Gosling for Barbie. Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things, De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon, and Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction. It is, as per usual, absolutely stacked.
Yeah,
it's one of those years where it's like any one of those guys could win, and it would be like, I'm okay with this.
Yep, not a bad choice in the bunch.
You know what I mean? For a lot of the time, like, well, sometimes you'll get like there's one on the tacked on the end there where you're like, I don't know, but yeah, like everything about all of these performances has been really, really well received. You're going to sense a theme from the sorts of things that I'm talking about. I think it's Downey. Like, I think he's been winning a bunch as he's been making the circuit. And it's just, he's so good. Like, he's so good in a role that could have been an absolute throwaway. And he is a central part of a central and dynamic part of this story in a way that I don't know that that character would have been in the hands of a different actor.
Right.
If that makes sense. Like, I referred to it as, like, it's almost like he inverted his chemistry, like his sort of charisma. Like he basically like turned it inward and weaponized it in a way that, like, I think we've always known that Downey was capable of great work, like all the way back to like Chaplin. That movie's 30 years old now, but to see it sort of to see him get to work with a master like Nolan was really, I think that really benefited him and ultimately us. You know, I would love to see Gosling win this. I really would, but I don't think it's going to happen. Which is too bad.
Yeah. How about supporting actress?
Supporting actress. Well, we were talking about the holdovers. I think this is where it lands one. Divine Randolph as the woman who runs the cafeteria.
She is great.
Delightful. Yeah. So good. Such a funny and moving and genuine kind of performance. You know, and that sort of thing where you just felt it was one of those very easy sort of lived in kind of performances that, you know, not necessarily super flashy, but, you know, and then the rest of the crew, Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, America Ferrera for her work in Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad, which I did not see. Nope. I don't think a lot of people did. and then Danielle Brooks from The Color Purple, which is weirdly absent from a lot of these lists. Like, it's just one of those things where, like, I thought that movie was going to really sort of make an impact, but it just kind of came and went, and it never really resonated with people the way I think a lot of people thought it would. But yeah, so I think Divine Joy Randolph kind of wins this one in a walk.
All right, how about Best Actress or Actress in a Lead Role?
Yes. So you've got Lily Gladstone from Killers of the Flower Moon, Emma Stone for Poor Things, Sandra Huller, Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan from Maestro, and Annette Bening from Naiad. Again, no one saw it. It's a two-horse race, I think. I think it's Gladstone and Stone. Funny how that... I think in the end, I don't know, Lily Gladstone just keeps winning, and she's so good in that movie, man. She is so excellent. It is a very honest, a very raw, and lacking affect kind of performance, which is absolutely beautifully suited for this particular movie, particularly her place in it when you're surrounded by talented but notorious, like, go big guys like DiCaprio and De Niro, to be able to sort of stay, you know, centered and within yourself and still hold your own on screen with those guys. Yeah. Like, that's impressive. And so she really crushes it. But I will say, if Emma Stone didn't already have one of these, I think she'd have a real shot. But I think there are a few things the Academy loves more than a good story. And Lily Gladstone is a great story. And so I'm expecting that she'll win pretty handily.
Best Actor, boy, you feel bad for people like Jeffrey Wright, Paul Giamatti. There's so many great performances, but I think everybody in the world is pretty convinced that Cillian Murphy's got this wrapped up.
I don't know how you don't vote for Cillian Murphy. Like, I mean, you're the centerpiece of the most celebrated movie of the year. Mm-hmm. And it's a large part of why it's celebrated is your performance. Like, he's so good as Robert Oppenheimer. Like, it's such a heavy lift, man. Like, it's 3 hours of, like, you know, wearing fedoras and smoking cigarettes and basically like, you know, internalizing the fact that you may be destroying the world at any given point. Like, it's a big ask. And he really nails it. That being said, Paul Giamatti is just unbelievable in The Holdovers. Yeah. Like, that is such a wonderful role. You know, he and Alexander Payne clearly have a real connection, as far as, like, actor director goes. And so, like, the work that Giamatti does in The Holdovers is, well, we kind of talked about it a little bit. Like, it's that sort of 70s throwback vibe. Like, it feels like the sort of role that, I don't know, like, you could see, like, I'm not trying to think of a good example, like someone who was, you know, well established in the 70s, you know, not necessarily your heartthrob or anything like that, your character actor getting that chance to sort of shine. It's a wonderful performance. But, you know, Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction, also by all accounts, absolutely brilliant. You know, and then you have Bradley Cooper, who was good in Maestro, but it's like, yeah, man, like, you can't hang here, my friend. I will confess that I've not seen Rustin, so I can't speak to the quality of Colman Domingo's performance here. I know he's a very talented actor, so I'm sure it's great. But again, I mean, I think it's got to be Cillian Murphy. Yeah.
Will there be a special Oscar for Giamatti's Eye?
Oh my God! Oh, the ongoing bit about that whole thing. Just, yeah. Oh, it just You're looking at it, and I'm like, I don't know what they did to you to make you look like that, but I bet it was just excruciating.
I read that it was a contact lens,
right?
But it was opaque, and so he was essentially blind in that eye through the whole shoot.
Well, I mean, who needs depth perception?
Right.
Overrated.
And I guess, and he wouldn't tell his co-star Dominic Sessa, because Sessa would look at him when they would wrap shooting for the day, but he wouldn't say anything. He was a little bit intimidated. He didn't want to say your eye. And Giamatti just played it like nothing had happened. Yeah.
That's so good. So good.
And it's a character that, well, it is an unlikable character, and yet you were so drawn to him.
Well, like, I thought about this while I was watching it. Like, how much do you think he channeled his dad?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? For those who don't know, his father was A. Bartlett Giamatti, who was a professor at Yale before briefly being commissioner of Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Well, and he certainly knew that landscape, the private schools of the 1970s in New England. And man, it was great.
Yeah, so good.
All right, finally, Best Picture. I assume it's Oppenheimer. Is there a dark horse?
I mean, honestly, maybe The Holdovers.
Yeah.
Like that, it's the sort of like, see, like Oppenheimer and Barbie are kind of two sides of the same coin.
Right.
You know, so it's like, I don't see Barbie overtaking Oppenheimer in that way. But if the Academy is like, if somebody like is actively, because we're talking about the ranked choice voting, you know, the preferential ballot. So it's, you know, if you have people who are like really polarized over like the Oppenheimer Barbie sort of debate, and it's like, oh, I'm going to vote Oppenheimer first, I'm going to vote Barbie last, or vice versa, like that leaves room for like the quote unquote third place film, whatever that one might be, to maybe get, you know, elevated to the top spot. And of all the films out there, like, it's, I mean, I think the one that is different enough that would be that sort of, sort of dark horse choice, I think might be The Holdovers. I really
now, was
do.
It 2 years ago that Parasite won?
Yes.
So any chance that Anatomy of a Fall could sneak in there?
I mean, it's got a shot. Like, I mean, it's on the ballot, so they've all got a shot. But I mean, I just don't think enough people saw it.
Right.
Like, I think that's the big thing. Like the deal with Parasite was it did sort of develop this sort of groundswell where a lot of people did go and see it. And I just don't know that Anatomy of a Fall developed that kind of audience.
It was a strange year. And you talked about the strikes and everything that happened. Was 2023 overall a good year for movies?
I think so. Like, I mean, I, you know, it's weird because it's basically, it's the first year, full year in the last, I don't know, 15 where I wasn't like actively reviewing movies as my job. So I didn't necessarily see as much as I have in the past, but you know, I mean, you could argue that it was kind of top heavy, when you look at your Oppenheimers and your Barbies and your Killers of the Flower Moon. But we also saw kind of, I don't know, one could argue that 2023 may have marked the beginning of the end of the, you know, the superhero movie era, you know, like it's just those films just aren't they're not proving as popular at the box office as they have in the past.
And the fact that you've got some, well, I would say smaller, more personal movies in there that like American Fiction, like The Holdovers, that probably would not have had a whiff in previous years when you had a lot of big product out there.
Right. That's the thing too. Like it's where, you know, there's still plenty of blockbuster action out there if that's what you want. Like, you know, it's easy to forget because, you know, it feels like a million years ago, but like, you know, 2023, like the Mission Impossible movie came out.
Yeah,
you know, there
yeah.
there were a couple of Marvel movies and you know, a couple of DC movies. Like there was a lot of that stuff out there, but it just doesn't have the same sort of cultural resonance as it did even 5 years ago. And you know, I don't know how much of that is due to habits changing because of the pandemic, films being delayed by strikes and other production issues, and I mean, frankly, just oversaturation. Like, I mean,
and you wonder too how much those people who vote want to see a movie like either Oppenheimer or Barbie win, because they were movies that got people back into the theaters.
Right. Well, that's the thing. And like, it's interesting because both of those movies, like, I mean, they both cleared $1 billion, you know, like, and you know, it's not necessarily what you would expect, like a 3-hour biopic about the father of the nuclear bomb and a movie about a doll. Like that, like those were the two biggest movies of 2023. It's the Barbenheimer phenomenon, I think, really reignited theater going in a way that that I don't think you could have. You can't create that.
Right.
Like that came about in a very organic way. And people like, you know, like myself, like I Barbenheimered. I saw them both the same day. I got a t-shirt. You know what I mean? Like but it was really nice to sort of feel like going to the movies was an event again. And I hadn't felt that for a long time. And I felt that a little bit with Dune Part 2, if I'm honest about it. Like, it was a full house, kind of a rowdy crowd. Like, people were definitely jazzed to be there. And it seems like, you know, I'm not alone in that.
Yeah.
So hopefully we will continue down this path of finding the balance between the big blockbusters and the smaller and more intimate movies, particularly when it comes to these kinds of, you know, awards.
Before we let you go, one more thing to mention. Friday night, the focus group back at it.
That's right. We're doing a show this Friday night at the Bangor Arts Exchange. Show starts at 8 p.m. Doors open at 7:30. Tickets are $10. Ooh. And we'll go and... who knows what we're going to talk about? Maybe we'll talk about some movies. Maybe we'll talk about, I don't know, the eclipse. There's an eclipse coming. Yeah. I don't know if you know about that. And just a quick shout out. Anyone who's looking for something fun to do Saturday night, the Bangor Symphony Orchestra's annual soiree is Saturday night. I'll be there, dressed to the nines. Hopefully I'll see you there.
All right. Thanks, Al. We'll see you next week.
Yes, sir.
Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Pass the Popcorn. We'll take a final break. Wrap it up right after this on Downtown.
Hi, this is Mary Kay Carpenter, and you're listening to Downtown with Rich Kim.
Wow, is that your logo on your heat pump cover?
Yes, Black's Heat Pumps did it.
That's awesome. What a great idea. And it matches your building, too.
Black's Heat Pumps made it easy. They came out for an estimate and installed it, too, with fantastic attention to detail.
Well, now I want my living room unit to match.
From cleaning, installs, and repairs, plus custom heat pump weather caps for your home or business, contact Black's Heat Pumps, a Fujitsu Elite dealer. Learn more, see pictures, and financing options at blacksheatpumps.com.
The better way to a better window. Renewal by Anderson.
Get ready to welcome the freshness of spring into your home with Renewal by Anderson, where your window and door dreams come to life.
This is owner Troy Pearl here to tell you that from your free in-home consultation to your window and door installation, we ensure a seamless home improvement process that will leave you with satisfaction and a warranty. But that's not all. Our exclusive FiberX material, high-performance glass, and custom designs set Renewal by Anderson apart. Experience the durability of FiberX, the clarity of high-performance glass, and the freedom to design a home that reflects your unique style. And here's an offer that blooms just in time for spring. Buy two windows or doors and get the third at an incredible 50% off.
To schedule your free in-home consultation, visit rbagreatermaine.com. That's rbagreatermaine.com.
The better way to a better window. Renewal by Anderson.
Dunnett Incorporated is a family-owned business that's been serving the people of Central Maine since 1948, offering the best in appliances and mattresses from brands you know and trust, and they service what they sell. If you've had the experience of buying an appliance and finding that service means waiting on hold on a helpline, discover the Dunnett difference from pros who know what they're doing and are here to help. Visit them at 63 Washington Street, Penobscot Plaza in Bangor. Check out the website at dunnettinc.com or give them a call at 947-4572. Dunnett has done it again.
Hi, this is Eric.
And Christine.
From the Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, inviting you to come experience everything that we have to offer.
Sure, you already know we have the most expertly cultivated selection of fine wine, craft beer, meads, and ciders in the region.
But have you tried our wide variety of cheeses? procured meats and gourmet goods. Our exclusive line of Tavolo specialty oils and vinegars, now featuring apple cider vinegar and organic sunflower seed oil made right here in Maine. Our olive bar. And don't miss the crusty baguettes.
We can put it all together in a brilliant platter or gift basket packaged with locally made wine and cheese accessories.
And while our selection is impressive, most importantly, know that we offer the service and knowledge to help anyone from the seasoned buyer to the nervous newcomer.
Bangor Wine and Cheese, family owned and operated since 2000, is located at 86 Hammond Street in the heart of downtown Bangor.
Come in, let us cater to you and discover why we say drink